This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Today on the show, I am catching up with Tan Hyang Lee. She is the Advocacy and Communications Officer with the Women's Aid Organization, and she joins me to discuss laws on violence against women that we would like to see the government reform. In particular, we will be discussing reforms on laws governing rape, stalking, and domestic violence. Welcome, Hyang Lee. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure. So, I think last week that we were greeted with the news that the government has no plans to amend the law to criminalize marital rape. This is something I know that everyone at WAO has been advocating for. We've been fighting against that. This, of course, was announced by the Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Mohammad Hanipah. Could you explain what has happened there?
Yeah, so to give you a bit of background, we have laws on rape in the penal code. So it basically explains, you know, what rape is. And there is an exception to the rape laws that says, you know, if a husband were to have sexual intercourse with his wife, then that would not be considered rape. Essentially, this means that wives who are raped by their husbands are not protected under rape laws. And that's obviously a big gap.
It's a very big loophole there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so why is it not? Why is marital rape not a concept that exists in Malaysian law?
Yeah, so our rape laws, which are in the penal code, really came from the British. And in those days, there was the conception that, you know, wives do not have the right to say no to their husbands. Essentially, you know, they were properties of their husbands. But, you know, over the years, we have seen many countries that had inherited British laws, especially related to disexception to rape, have in fact changed their laws. And recently, Singapore announced that they are planning to criminalize marital rape. So, you know, we got this law from the British many, many years ago, and times have changed. And it's time that we also follow suit. And just a case in point, in 2016, the World Bank did a review of 173 countries, and they found that only 28 had marital rape exception laws. So we are really one of the minority countries that still permit husbands to rape their wives, essentially.
Okay. And the government said it cannot be a crime, or they cannot make it a crime because it's difficult to prove in court. I mean, if so many countries have this law already, I mean, that certainly can't be the case.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole argument that something is hard to prove and therefore we should not make it a crime, that's a faulty logical argument, right? Because if it is a crime, then it is a crime. Whether or not it's hard to prove, that is secondary. And it's also interesting that when it comes to sexual assault, people often highlight the issue of evidence. And I think that also stems from perhaps, you know, stereotypes or the notion that, you know, rape survivors are not credible, that, you know, women are not to be believed when they report sexual assault.
Because, I mean, the Mohammad Hanipah, right? He said that what's the use of putting in a law when the chance of conviction is low? Is that true? Would, I mean, would the chance of conviction be low in cases like this, you think?
You know, it really depends on, you know, how our criminal justice system handles such cases. And, you know, if law enforcement have the idea that wives, you know, are not obligated to, you know, give a blanket consent to their spouses and that, you know, husbands and wives, everyone needs to ask for consent before any sexual activity. And if we have this as a starting point, then that would actually shape the way we investigate such cases. And just as an example, WAO actually handled a marital rape case, and you know, the medical officer who handled the case made a comment saying that, well, you know, husbands have the right to have sex with their wives. So, you know, if law enforcement has certain assumptions that, you know, make them believe that wives do not have the right to say no, then that would definitely affect the way cases are handled. So by removing this exception in our rape laws and essentially criminalizing marital rape, this would send a strong message that we, as a country, we do not, you know, we do not condone such actions. And, you know, we believe that, you know, wives have the right to say no, and everyone should not be coerced into doing any sexual activity that they did not consent to, and regardless of their relationship with the other person. So sending this message would hopefully, you know, change mindsets of law enforcement as well.
Just through the course of your work through WEO, I mean, you mentioned the case just now, but I mean, is this quite a common occurrence, or is this something that you are seeing, you know, enough to warrant, I mean, concern, obviously?
Yeah. So, you know, a third of the domestic violence survivors who sought refuge at WAO, Women's Aid Organization, in 2017 had experienced sexual abuse. So this shows that, you know, sexual abuse, which includes marital rape, is a common form of domestic violence. Yeah. And so marital rape, you know, does often happen in the context of domestic violence. And just, you know, give you another example. In 2014, University Science Malaysia, they conducted a study and they found that about 9% of women who have ever been in a relationship have experienced domestic violence in their lifetime. So, you know, we estimate that this amounts to about 800,000 women. And of these number, 11% reported forced sex as a form of abuse. So, in short, we estimate that over 100,000 women in Malaysia have been raped by their intimate partner in their lifetime. So it's not an isolated problem. It does happen. And I think it's also worth noting that, you know, rape and sexual assault is often perpetrated by people we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, for people who maybe wonder, you know, how prevalent this is, well, in fact, rape is often done by someone the survivor knows. It's not often done by a stranger that's lurking in a dark alley or jumps out from, you know, behind a tree or something. It's by people we know, and this could include intimate partners and even husbands.
And as you said, it is a form of, sometimes it's a form of control as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
There's so many different facets to it. I just want to talk a little bit about how it goes against international norms and standards. I mean, I think it was the CEDAW committee themselves. I mean, we were reviewed and we didn't do very well in that review. And even the CEDAW committee recommended that Malaysia criminalize marital rape. Am I correct?
Yes. So Malaysia was reviewed by the CEDAW committee. So the CEDAW committee is this UN expert committee related to women's rights. And they recommended Malaysia to criminalize marital rape in 2006 and also in our recent review in 2018. So, you know, Malaysia has signed CEDAW, which is this UN Women's Rights Convention. So as part of our obligation under international law, we do need to criminalize marital rape and also follow the global trend where countries are recognizing marital rape as a crime.
All right. So, I mean, there was a concerted movement to criminalize marital rape, correct me if I'm wrong, but it didn't quite, it fizzled out, did it? Is that what happened?
You know, women's groups have been advocating for this for
quite a number of years.
Yeah, I mean, this issue really, I mean, fundamentally, it's about recognition of women's autonomy, right? You know, when we put in clauses that exclude wives from rape laws, it essentially sends the message that wives do not have autonomy over their bodies. It sends the message that, yeah, you know, women's or wives' bodies belong to their husbands. So it's something that women's groups have been advocating for many, many years. And we hope that, you know, the government will take the step to make it a crime. And we're also very heartened that YB Hannah Yeo recently made a statement about marital rape. And she says that, you know, she does want to look into this law, and she would like to bring many stakeholders to the table to see what we can do about it. So, yeah, we hope that this will be a great step. And in the near future, we hope to see this exception removed.
Okay, I mean, what would your recommendations be? I mean, let's say we're talking to YB Hannah right now, you know, what would you say to her?
Yeah, it's actually not a complicated thing to criminalize marital rape.
Well, the minister would say otherwise.
Yeah, so, you know, I think some people may have the impression that we are trying to create a new offence called marital rape, and maybe that, you know, it sounds very complicated, but in fact, all we are asking for is that we remove the exclusion, or rather the exception, that excludes wives from rape laws. So essentially we're saying that rape laws should cover everyone if whatever act that happened meets the criteria of rape as per the penal code, then, you know, everyone should be covered. It doesn't matter what the relationship is between the victim and the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, you know, for anyone listening, it's naive to assume that rape does not occur mm-hmm. in a marriage. I mean, yeah. that if violence can mm-hmm. happen in a marriage, mm-hmm. rape is also very possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to highlight another issue as well. I think the Deputy Law Minister did bring up a provision in a penal code which is titled Husband Causing Hurt in Order to Have Sexual Intercourse. And this provisions was used as an argument as to why the laws as it is sufficient. So essentially this section is Section 375A in mm-hmm. a penal code. Mm-hmm. And the offence is husband causing hurt in order to have sexual intercourse. And the punishment is a maximum of 5 years. Okay. But we believe that this provision is not sufficient, is inadequate, for the reason that it doesn't actually recognize rape per se. It is covering the causing of hurt in order to have sexual intercourse. But we know that rape can happen in instances where hurt may not be caused. For instance, if the victim or survivor had been intoxicated or drunk, or through maybe more subtle forms of emotional coercion. So fundamentally, rape is about lack of consent, and we believe that this clause does not recognize rape sufficiently because it recognizes harm rather than the lack of consent. And secondly, the punishment under this clause is only a maximum of 5 years, whereas for rape, it could go up to 30 years. So it's a more lenient punishment compared to rape.
Right. Okay. So we are advocating basically for change to the laws mm-hmm. and a recognition of rape as a crime.
Yeah.
Marital rape
mm-hmm.
as a crime.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so Hyung Lee, another area where there is still some kind of gray mm-hmm. areas, I suppose, that are not covered under the law is under our rape laws. What are mm-hmm. the problems there?
Yeah, so our current rape laws basically only cover women survivors. So something that we have been advocating for is for the law to be gender neutral. Everyone, regardless of their gender, should be protected under the rape laws. And you know, if they have been forced into sex without their consent, they should be protected regardless of their gender. And in addition, our rape laws are actually quite narrow in that it only covers sexual intercourse. So what we are advocating for is that the definition of rape be expanded to cover you know, penetration of any orifice, mm-hmm. Not just the vagina, and also penetration by body parts and also objects. So essentially, we hope that the rape laws be amended to be more expansive and to include all genders and also different types of rape.
Okay, so at the moment, we're only is it true that only men can be seen as perpetrators and women as we'll use the word victims? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so under the Penal Code, which is Section 375, that's the section on rape, it says that a man is said to commit rape who, except in the case hereinafter accepted, which, you know, includes the exception on marital rape, has sexual intercourse with a woman under circumstances falling under any of the following descriptions. And it goes on to list you know, the different circumstances in which an act is considered to be rape. And that includes sexual intercourse against her will, without her consent, and so on and so forth. So basically, this implies that only a woman can be a victim of rape, and only a man can be a perpetrator of rape. But, you know, this is obviously a limitation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in various other jurisdictions, there is the recognition that rape can happen to anyone, and therefore everyone must be protected regardless of their gender.
Okay. All right. There's a lot of loopholes, aren't there?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a law that we inherited back from the British.
From the British,
yeah,
right.
Many, many years ago. And and, you know, laws are progressively being improved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to rape laws, it's a law that, you know, you see a lot of advocacy by women's groups across the world. And with more advocacy, we see a more comprehensive definition that covers, you know, more types of sexual assault and also covers more people as well.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Tan Hyang Lee. She's the Advocacy and Communications Officer at Women's Aid Organization. And we're discussing, well, the laws governing violence against women in Malaysia and what we would like to advocate in terms of legal reform. We just spoke about marital rape. And after this quick break, we're going to come back and talk a little bit about stalking and domestic violence. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture. And I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Tan Hyang Lee. She's the Advocacy and Communications Officer at the Women's Aid Organization, or WAO, and we're discussing how we need to advocate for legal reform regarding laws about violence against women. We just spoke about marital rape earlier, and now we're going to talk a little bit about stalking. So, Hyang Lee, I mean, we've discussed this before on the show, but mm-hmm. just to refresh everyone's memory, in essence, stalking is not a crime in Malaysia.
No, stalking is not a crime in Malaysia. So this means that if someone were to follow you around, communicate with you constantly, maybe show up at your workplace regularly, this is not a crime in Malaysia.
So why is that? I mean, why mm-hmm. has it not been included mm-hmm. in the... It's not an offence in the penal mm-hmm. code, essentially, right?
Yeah, so actually stalking is a relatively new crime. I mean, even if we look at other jurisdictions, the earliest law on stalking was in California, and that was in the 1990.
Okay.
So stalking... is a relatively new law. So we are beginning to see, you know, various countries around the world starting to criminalize stalking.
Mm.
So we think that Malaysia should also follow suit. And just an example, Singapore actually recognizes stalking as a crime.
Singapore seems to be doing a lot better than us in these areas.
Yeah, I mean, we can also, yeah, follow suit
yeah.
in many ways.
And stalking, like you said, it's just somebody, it may seem innocuous, just somebody following you around, but it is, of course, a very harmful act, you
yeah.
know. Maybe you could elaborate why mm-hmm. that is. I'm sure you've seen many cases of it happening.
Yeah, so stalking often precedes more serious or more violent forms of crime. So in Canada and the United States, research showed that 90% of women who were murdered by their intimate partners were previously stalked by them. So this shows that stalking often leads to more grievous crimes,
mm-hmm.
and therefore we should nip things in the bud by, you know, criminalizing stalking and ensure that we do not let stalking escalate to crimes such as murder.
Yeah, I mean, if I knew that I won't get in trouble for, you know, following someone around all the time and making
mm-hmm.
them so uncomfortable, you know, possibly making their colleagues uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't I do that, right? It's
mm-hmm.
a form of intimidation. It's a form of power control.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, going back to your comment on control, yes, it's absolutely a means for perpetrators to control a victim or survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And research also has found that this is in the context of domestic violence. So abusers who stalk their intimate partners are more controlling and physically and sexually violent compared to abusers who do not stalk their partners. So clearly, stalking, you know, is a form of control, and it is a serious issue that we need to look into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were mentioning that it's stalking is likely quite widespread in Malaysia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in 2013, WAO made a report, and we documented 34 cases of domestic violence. And of these cases, 26% of the victims were stalked by their abusers. And, you know, this is actually quite consistent with data from other countries. So in the US, a third of women domestic violence survivors were stalked by their abusers. So that's one third. So, you know, if we then extrapolate, you know, statistics, so we know that about 800,000 women in Malaysia face domestic violence. So, you know, if we were to just extrapolate the data, this could mean that about 250,000 Malaysian women who are domestic violence survivors have been stalked by the abusers. So you know, we definitely need to ensure that this behavior is addressed by making stalking a crime.
Okay. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Again, there was a movement, I think it was by the former Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, to recognize stalking in the Domestic Violence Amendment Bill 2017, correct?
But yeah.
Nothing happened.
Or it fell through. So what happened was the Domestic Violence Act was amended in 2017. And in fact, the then Minister of Women actually wanted to recognize stalking as a form of domestic violence. But because of the way our domestic violence law works, before an act is considered as a form of domestic violence, it first needs to be an offence in the penal code, which is the laws related to crimes. Mm-hmm. But because stalking is not a crime in the penal code, therefore she was unable to include stalking as a form of domestic violence. So it's a bit of technicalities there. But in short, stalking is not a crime, and therefore it could not be recognized as domestic violence when the Domestic Violence Act was amended last year. But the point is that even back in 2017, the then minister actually wanted there to be protections against stalking. But, you know, we needed to first make it a crime under the penal code, which is what we are advocating for.
Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, stalking then, I mean, I could stalk you, you could stalk me, I could stalk politicians, we could stalk anybody. Stalking is not necessarily just a domestic violence issue, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we want to make it a crime under the penal code, which covers everyone. And yeah, I've heard, you know, anecdotal evidence that a lot of public figures get stalked, you know, especially through social media. You know, they get lots of messages to their inboxes. And yeah, it is a form of annoyance. It can make someone fear for their safety and makes them feel that they are under surveillance. And that, you know, can lead to, you know, all forms of psychological distress. And yeah, research does show that stalking, you know, can cause major mental health consequences. And this includes anxiety, depression, helplessness, and symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. So yeah, there are various mental health implications if we do not address stalking.
I mean, I can just share another anecdotal story. A former colleague of mine who, I mean, obviously was a radio personality, was also stalked. So like every time he left to work and he used to do the night shift, you know, there would be somebody just waiting for him outside his office. And this was at midnight. But of course, there's nothing you can do because no crime has been committed as such, right? But imagine the fear.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming out at midnight and the same person is there waiting for you. Not pleasant. Not pleasant. How are we doing? I mean, how is the world doing in terms of criminalizing stalking? I mean, I know in America, we always read about stars who are stalked and, you know, they manage to get protection orders and things like that.
So yeah, actually, that was actually one of the reasons why, you know, California was the first jurisdiction to actually criminalize stalking, because, you know, California, lots of celebrities there.
Yeah,
so countries such as Canada, the US, South Africa, Japan, the Philippines, Germany, the UK, India, and Singapore, you know, they all have stalking legislation. So yeah, you know, there is a relatively new recognition that stalking is a big issue, and therefore we urge Malaysia to also follow suit and make stalking a crime.
So we are asking for it to be an offence in the penal code.
Yep. So, you know, there has been some prior engagement between women's groups, you know, the Ministry of Women and also the then Attorney General's Chambers. So back in 2013 to 2015, there was actually this working committee chaired by the Attorney General. And, you know, so we were negotiating and engaging and advocating for stalking to be made a crime. And so we recommended that stalking be included in the penal code, which is the law that relates to crime. And in addition, the Attorney General also suggested that we include a restraining order in the criminal procedure code. So this would ensure that if you are stalked, it's not just that the stalker could, you know, face legal action, but in addition, it also ensures that the survivor or victim has some form of protection from stalking.
Yeah, okay. So Are we seeing any form of, like, I suppose, progress in the area? Like talking to the new people in charge, for example?
Yeah, so, you know, we are currently engaging with the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development and also the Law Minister. So it's an ongoing engagement. And, you know, we hope that, you know, with the new government and, you know, we're seeing a lot of movement and there are a lot of laws that are going to be reformed. I think recently the Law Minister announced, you know, one whole list of laws that will be reformed. So we also hope that stalking will be included as one of the laws that will be amended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how can people, like, you know, anyone listening, you know, I'm sure all of us have faced some form of stalking. How can they get involved in this, I suppose, movement, you know, to get this passed as an offence in the
penal code? It'd be great if, you know, maybe you could share your experience, maybe tweet, you know, use the hashtag. So we actually had this hashtag, you know, before, and it's hashtag make stalking a crime.
Okay.
And maybe tweet at our law minister, tweet at the Ministry of Women, just to show that this is an issue that is of public concern and it's an issue that affects a lot of people, and we hope that with public support we will see stalking made a crime in Malaysia.
Okay. All right. So again, that you can tweet, the hashtag is make stalking a crime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So folks, get that done. we're going to pivot a little bit now and we're going to talk a little bit about domestic violence. So, I mean, we had some very good news that the Domestic Violence Act 2018 replaced the Domestic Violence Act 1996. Mm-hmm. You know, there was amendments. Mm-hmm. It brought positive, significant changes. For those who don't remember, you know, maybe you could just walk us through some of the more significant changes.
Yeah, so the Domestic Violence Act was amended in 2017. And so it was a really great amendment and lots of new protections available to survivors. And one of them is the introduction of an emergency protection order, or also known as an EPO. So it essentially means that if someone were to experience domestic violence, they can go to the social welfare department and within about 2 hours, they can get a document that basically instructs the perpetrator to not, you know, to not commit domestic violence.
Okay.
And so it's a really great mechanism because it's very fast. So you're supposed to get it within 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the emergency protection order lasts for 7 days.
Okay.
Yeah. And if it's after hours, you can also contact Talian Kase, which is 15999.
Okay, so you call and then you can make your report and get the EPO?
I think if you call 15999, then they will provide you with further information on how to go and get the emergency protection order. And you can also walk in straight to the social welfare department. And maybe here, you know, I'll just, you know, share a bit about, you know, what are your rights.
Yes,
if you are in a domestic violence situation, what can you do? So firstly, you can contact Women's Aid Organization. We have a hotline. It's 03-7956-3488. We are also available on WhatsApp, which is 018-988-058. And if you did not catch all those numbers, just go to our website, wao.org.my. So if you give us a call, we can walk you through your rights, you know, what are your options, and, you know, provide you with information for you to make the best decisions for yourself. So that's one option. The second option is to, as I mentioned, you can get the emergency protection order from the social welfare department. You can walk in or you can call 15999, which is Talian Kase, and, you know, they can provide you with further assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And your third option is to go to the one-stop crisis center, which is located in the emergency room or government hospitals. So at the one-stop crisis center, also known as the OSCC, you can get medical examination, and the examination could be used as evidence if you choose to bring your case to court. You can make a police report there, and you can also get connected to various other services. So the OSCC, or the one-stop crisis center, is essentially a one-stop place for, you know, cases of domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual abuse, and so on. So that's your third option. And your fourth option is to walk into a police station, and you can make a police report. And when you make your police report, you can request for an interim protection order. So the interim protection order basically is valid during the police investigation.
Okay.
So it's different from the emergency protection order, in that the emergency protection order lasts for 7 days.
Okay.
It's emergency, you get it within about 2 hours. The interim protection order lasts throughout the police investigation.
Okay.
Right. And there are some steps, but the first step would be to make the police report and to tell the police that you want to get the interim protection order. And there are more steps, but I think I'll just simplify it for now. Just go to the police station and make that report and request for the interim protection order. So those are your rights under the law.
Okay, all right. I mean, and I'm sure, in cases like these, people are fearful for their lives. So I guess the police would probably be the safest place if, they're facing imminent danger or immediate danger.
That's right. Yeah, if you are facing imminent danger, then call 999 as well.
So this is domestic violence, right? So that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be married to kind of qualify for all of this, right?
Right. So under the Domestic Violence Act, domestic violence covers spouses and also family members. It unfortunately does not cover non-married couples. So this is a major gap that women's groups have been trying to address. We want the Domestic Violence Act to cover non-married couples for obvious reasons, because the dynamics of domestic violence can happen in intimate relationships regardless of whether the couple is married or otherwise.
Yes.
Also do want to add that when I mentioned that the Domestic Violence Act covers spouses, it also covers de facto spouses.
Okay.
And this means that the couple had gone through some form of a customary or religious ceremony, but may not have been registered. So you have some sort of evidence, perhaps a photograph, or perhaps some form of evidence showing that you have indeed gone through a customary or religious ceremony, you would be covered under the Domestic Violence Act, even if you are not registered legally.
Okay, but I mean, like you said, that is a very big gap there. If, people who are living together, who are cohabitating, they are not offered that same protection because... What about former spouses? Are they also covered under that?
Yeah, former spouses are covered.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm just going to go through, what the Domestic Violence Act actually says. Who exactly is covered? So it covers... spouses, former spouses, a child. So, if a parent were to abuse a child, that's also covered under the Domestic Violence Act.
Sure.
It covers any family member. And this could include, adult children, brothers or sisters, or any relatives. So if adult child were to abuse his or her parents, that would also be domestic violence. And lastly, it also covers what the law considers as an incapacitated adult. And that means, someone who is incapacitated and is also a living, with the perpetrator.
Right. Okay. But the gap that we need to see some reform is people who are not married.
Yeah, because even internationally, internationally, the term that's more commonly used is intimate partner violence.
Yeah.
So it recognizes intimate partners regardless of their marital status.
Okay. Okay. All right. How can we do, how can we go about even, changing that? Because, I mean, it took a long time to even get this done, right? But still, this was allowed to kind of, I suppose, happen. Mm-hmm. What can we do?
Yeah, so we hope that, the Act will be further amended, hopefully in the near future, because, laws are dynamic, right?
Yeah.
We always recognize that what we have, has certain, limitations. So, we will continue to advocate to ensure that the law is continuously improved. And in the context of domestic violence, we want to plug that gap, ensure that even non-married couples are covered. Because even at WAO, we have supported domestic violence survivors who are not married. And in those situations, it means that the survivor is not able to receive all the protections granted under the Domestic Violence Act. Things like the emergency protection order, the interim protection order that I had earlier mentioned, are not offered to to then. Non-married survivors.
Okay, so then what can they do? Because, I mean, truthfully, from hosting the show, I've actually had people coming and asking me, you know, my former partner, for example, abused me, but we're not married. What can I do? Mm-hmm. So what can they do?
Yeah, so you can still make a police report.
Okay.
So let me maybe explain a little bit about how our domestic violence act works. So as I, you know, mentioned briefly just now, and I mentioned that the domestic violence act is read together with the penal code.
Yes.
So it means that, so the penal code really covers everyone. It covers, you know, just anyone, whether you are strangers, you are friends, family members, intimate partners, covers everyone. And the penal code outlines, you know, various types of offenses, like, say, criminal intimidation, for example, you know, rape, for example. So how the Domestic Violence Act works is that if certain offenses in the penal code is done by a family member or, you know, spouse, then the victim gets certain protections, such as the interim protection order, the emergency protection order, and so on and so forth. So if you are not married, you can still make a police report. The perpetrator is still accountable for all the crimes that are done under the penal code.
Okay.
It's just that you as a survivor do not get the protections that are afforded under the Domestic Violence Act.
Okay.
But it's important to know that, you know, the perpetrator still can be held accountable under the penal code.
Mm-hmm.
So do make that police report if you want to take action.
Okay.
And, you know, that could be an option for you.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, there are options, but like you said, there's just not as many protections as with domestic violence survivors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that is something that needs some changing in the law there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, I guess if anybody's interested to, you know, I'm sure it's happened to many people. So talk to the law minister again. Talk to the family, community and development
minister. Just send that tweet.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have any questions, just feel free to reach out to Women's Aid Organization. You can find our hotline numbers on our website, wao.org.my.
Okay. All right. And I mean, just to repeat that, you know, if you are facing domestic violence or any sort of issues, the WA hotline is 0379563488. You can also, if you don't want to make that call, you can send a text or WhatsApp message to the TINA hotline, which is a Think I Need Assistance, right?
Yep.
And that's 0189888058.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And 24 hours, right?
The SMS WhatsApp line is 24 hours,
yeah.
Whereas the hotline, mostly working hours.
Okay. All right. And, you know, if anyone's listening and they'd like to, you know, volunteer maybe with the WAO, you know, get involved, how can they do that?
Yeah. So just go on to our website, wao.org.my, and there's information about how to volunteer and how to be involved in this cause.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Yang Li, for joining me today. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Feminist Fridays interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. We're also now on Spotify. You just need to search for BFM and under the podcast section, and you can find all of our podcasts there. This has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.